Welcome to Clause and Effects, the CDH podcast where business meets law. I'm your host, Petam Kunu, and today we are sitting with Roxanne Bain, our professional support lawyer who can turn any 200-page deal into elegant clarity. And we're here today to just demystify one of the most misunderstood areas of corporate law, mergers and acquisitions. So we're targeting six of the biggest myths in M&A, the ones clients whisper, the ones directors believe, and some of the ones that founders fear. Let's get right into it. Roxanne, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks, Peter. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to have you here today and we can bust some of these myths that are usually swirling around the M&A space. So I'm going to get right into it. And the first myth of today is that M&A is only for large corporations. I see that people usually get into this mindset where thinking that mid-sized or small businesses don't actually need mergers and acquisitions and that it's not their arena to play in. How can you reframe this perception for clients who think that they might just be too small for deal making?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the culprit is often the media spotlighting these mega deals. You know, that's where this misconception comes from. Like, for example, the Canal Plus multi-choice deal from last year. That's what everyone reads about. That's the sexy deal that's in the news. But the reality is that a large amount of M&A actually happens at the mid-market level or even at small business level. And M&A can be hugely helpful for smaller companies. You know, it can allow them to perhaps expand their business, move into a new territory, help with succession planning. And I think the important thing also to bear in mind is that the fundamentals are the same, whether it's a mega deal or a smaller deal. You know, we're looking at DDs, we're looking at, you know, structuring the transaction in the most efficient way. So often you'll have a small deal that carries a huge risk. You know, there's a hidden risk in the company. So just because it's small doesn't mean it's not going to be complex. So yeah, that's another thing to bear in mind as well.
And you pointed out something that I actually would like us to lead to the next myth. And this is something that I know we hear quite often, you know, in the room as lawyers, when we're in a deal, as soon as we say the words due diligence, you just see people rolling their eyes. Oh no, the lawyers are in the room. So this is one of my personal favorite ones. And I'd like you to just unpack for us why due diligence is not just a tick box exercise, but it's usually one of the most important value protection phases in the entirety of the deal.
So yes, due diligence is definitely seen as kind of a grudge purchase by clients, but it is so important. Doing a DD gives the buyer insight into what they're actually buying, right? There could be hidden risks in the target, which I already mentioned. Uncovering those risks helps the buyer make an informed decision. And it could even impact on things like purchase price. So the buyer might say, well, I've uncovered this risk and now I want to renegotiate the purchase price. And another thing that makes DD useful is the legal team will take the DD findings and adjust the deal agreements as appropriate. So we would include things like warranties and indemnities to reallocate risk as needed. So due diligence really, if it's done right, it can really protect value in the longer term.
Thank you for that. Now we understand that due diligence is not just a tick box exercise, but it actually can protect value long term. I'd like to posit one that maybe people, or I think actually drains value in your deal. And this is the idea that M&A takes long. It takes a long time for the process to get through timelines. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. That's what people think, that if you're going into any sort of an M&A deal, it's going to take years. You know, it's a process that's going to go on for a very long time. How can you kind of explain this to our audience today, just to elucidate maybe what makes M&A timelines drag and what makes an M&A deal more efficient than the next one?
Yeah, so I think the thing that makes timelines drag is often when regulatory approval is required. So if your deal requires a notification and approval from the Competition Commission or tribunal, then things are definitely going to take longer. That's usually in a deal, that's the last CP that the parties are waiting to be fulfilled. The important thing there is to be as prepared as possible. So don't get, you know, to the point where you're signing your deal and suddenly you realize that you need competition approval.
Yeah.
Think of everything up front and prepare. And lawyers can really help this process along. We have a wealth of experience in getting deals across the line. I mean, we get calls every day saying, I need to do a deal and it needs to be done within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've really honed our skills in making that a reality. So yeah, I've seen deals take months. I've seen them take years. And that's not to say that a lot of the time that is within the party's control. Often it's not. But it can certainly help to be as prepared as possible from the word go.
And, you know, I always hear the words or the phrase, you know, preparation breeds success. And we actually discussed this in our last episode as well. And if you haven't had a chance to check it out, please go to the CDH YouTube just to check out our last episode on the BEE under mergers and acquisitions. But something that we spoke about with my last guest as well was that legal work typically only tends to come in at the end. Once the terms have been laminated and the parties have shook hands, now is the time that they realize, oh, you know what? We actually need legal to seal the deal. This can be quite risky for the clients actually in the long term. So can you just let us know why it's important to involve legal right from the onset?
Yeah. So legal input shapes everything. You know, in a scenario like you just mentioned, where clients have sealed the terms, as you say, and then bring in legal, I mean, legal might see a problem, let's say from a tax perspective, and then say, well, actually, you can't structure your deal the way that you have structured it, and you have to basically start from scratch. And that's a lot of time and effort and money wasted. So getting lawyers involved from the word go is so important, not just from a structuring perspective, but also for lining up all the regulatory approvals and being prepared, like I mentioned, with respect to the previous myth. There's other things that lawyers need to look at upfront. If there are competition considerations, public interest considerations, you might need to look at the merger's effect on jobs, ownership percentages, things like that. So yeah, lawyers, get us involved as soon as possible. We are your friend.
And we often are, you know. I think a lot of people, when they hear the word lawyers, it's like red alarm bells just sign off in their head. But I promise you, we are here to actually help you and make the whole process smoother. So we are now on myth 5. And this is one that I've seen impact a lot of the mindsets with the people that we work with. The idea that if you have the capital, the deal is good as done. And I think it's one that always gets people, because it's actually quite a myth that capital will certainly equal closing. So can you just take us a little bit through why having enough money might actually not be enough for a deal? And what are the real deal breakers that people overlook?
Yeah. So capital is certainly a factor, a big factor. I mean, money talks, right? Mm. But it's not the only factor. You know, I've seen deals collapse for a myriad of reasons, whether that is because of regulatory approvals not coming through, but it could also be just sticky contractual elements. Maybe the parties just end up not being able to agree on something in the deal agreement. You know, they might have thought they were aligned at first, but as negotiations progress, they realize, well, actually, I'm not willing to accept this position. And then the deal actually falls over. So I think the key here, it's not just about money in the bank, right? It's about the terms on which that money is actually given.
I have one last myth to close us off. And this is a personal one. This is a fun one. So as you know, we are transactional lawyers. And we often hear, you know, when I walk into the room and I tell people I'm a lawyer, they instantly think, oh, it's litigation. And when I tell them, no, I'm actually a transactional lawyer, they look at me a bit like, oh, that seems a bit boring, isn't it? So I think that's one conception that people have about transaction lawyers, that it's just not as fun as litigation. What do you think? How has your experience been? I know mine. I'm just here to clear the air for everyone. This is my own personal one.
Yes. So for me, that could not be further from the truth. I think when I was a law student at university, I might have also had that perception. But having done M&A, I mean, we are always in a race against time to fulfill CPs and get closing done. We are often, you know, in a room with tens of people facilitating the final negotiations because the deal needs to be signed or closed, you know, within the next few hours. And on closing day, we are, you know, facilitating the implementation of, you know, not one, not two, but several transaction steps. And, you know, honestly, it's enough to make you age 10 years in a day. But I have to say, it's a lot of fun.
It is.
It's very exciting. And, you know, a lot of the time you wake up the next morning and you read about your deal in the news And that's always pretty cool. Yeah. And even if you don't read about your deal in the news, you wake up and you know that two companies are now married,
yes.
You know, which is quite satisfying. So no, I would not by any stretch say that we have boring jobs.
There you have it. So transactional lawyers, we're not boring. We're actually quite adrenaline junkies, I would say, in our own right.
Yes.
With multiple, you know, steps overlapping at the same time, it can get quite hectic. But like you said, there's no better feeling than just, you know, waking up in the morning and thinking, yes, you know, I got that deal over the line and with the help of the team. Okay, so now that we have had all our myth busting, I'd like us to just, as we close off, ground ourselves in one truth. So before I let you go, if you had to leave our listeners with just one reality about M&A, a single insight that cuts through every single myth that we have spoken about now, what would that truth be?
I think the truth is to get the lawyers involved as soon as possible. I know I've said this already, but it bears repeating. You will save yourself a lot of pain and suffering down the line if you give your lawyer a call when you first think of doing the deal. Contrary to popular belief, lawyers can actually get things done a lot faster.
Sure. That's true. Thank you so much, Roxanne, for bringing us a little bit of clarity, some depth, and maybe a little bit of spice to our conversation. I'm so happy to have you here today. And to our listeners, if this episode sparked something in you, whether you are considering a deal or leveling up your corporate knowledge, make sure to share this with someone navigating their next big move. Look out for all our other episodes as well on our CDH website, as well as our YouTube. And this is the last one of the year, so I will see you all in 2026. I'm your host, Petam Kunu, and for our last close off, this is the CDH podcast, Clause and Effect, where business meets law. Thank you so much.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.